This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 250 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. How are you tonight, Max?
Doing pretty well, David. Doing pretty well. We've got kind of an interesting collection of news stories this week, as it turned out.
Yeah, okay. You did all the work. I'll just take all the glory. But, you know, we need to congratulate ourselves on patting ourselves on the back for 250 of these episodes.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of a, I guess that's a minor milestone, but pretty significant anyway. Onward and upward to the next 250.
So tonight we're going to talk about spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of drones. Wonder how many people are in our listeners know that reference.
Maybe not so many
drones
anymore.
Drones from the EU, China, Japan, Korea, and Arctic, and we've got a hangover that I need to apologize for last week. So I think we should get started. What do you think?
All right, David, let's get started.
Well, our first story comes from DroneLife.com. European Parliament votes in favor of ESA's basic regulation, or, quote, it's a good day for the drone industry in Europe. It's nice to know that it's a good day in Europe. Wonder when it'll be a good day here in the States.
Yeah, I don't know. The problem that we share, I guess, is that in the European Union, you've got all the different member countries, and they sometimes view drones and regulations differently. We have one country, obviously, here in the United States, but it is a collection of states. And we also sometimes see drones treated differently within different states. But back to the EU anyway, what they've done here is revise what they call the basic regulation. And that's something that specifies aviation safety rules. And what they've done is to include a new mandate for the European Aviation Safety Agency, EASA. It's rules that apply to all civil drones, or rules that will apply to all civil drones. And in effect, it's creating a harmonized set of rules across the European Union.
All drones that are capable of transferring more than 80 joules of kinetic energy upon impact with a person must be registered. It's an interesting way to handle registration.
Yeah, it looks at the impact of the impact, I guess you could say.
It looks at the impact, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's an interesting way to measure it. It's sort of the energy of the drone, so it doesn't matter the dimensions or the mass, although the mass, of course, will be a factor in the energy that it may impart. But we have that. But the drone rules also establish some of the basic principles that cover safety of drones, security, privacy, also data protection and environmental protection. But we don't have right now a specific set of rules. The detailed drone rules are to come, and they'll be created by the EC, the European Commission, with help from EASA. So I guess in a way, David, this is kind of a framework for what will ultimately be the set of rules that will apply to all of the EU member countries.
Okay, so they're coloring, they're putting the puzzle together on all of the outside borders, and now they got to fill it in.
But that's a great move. I mean, it's an important step because it creates the environment that allows a common set of rules to be developed that would apply across the EU. Without this sort of framework, you're left with the individual countries addressing drones in their own ways. So this is the formalized structure, I guess you can say, that allows common rules to be created that would span the EU. Now, all that's, of course, is our perspective from across the pond here in the United States. We invite our European listeners, and we know we have quite a number of you out there. If you have some thoughts on this, the significance of it, the meaning, the importance, then let us know and give us your perspectives. You can write us at feedback@theuavdigest.com. If you want to record a little, well, your thoughts in audio, we invite you to do that. Just use your mobile phone or something similar and just make a little recording with your thoughts and send it to us.
So let's go from Europe to China. Drone deliveries become reality as China races to the lead. China is rapidly developing package delivery.
They are, and this article points out how the environment in China currently is really conducive to that. And some of the things they look at are the fact that the Chinese consumer market is huge. In China, there are more than 590 million rural residents, just talking about rural residents. And these are potential customers that are out where conventional delivery is expensive or it takes a long time or it's almost impossible. But there's a lot of, potential demand, I guess you could say, in the countryside in China. Well, so that's one aspect of this. Another is that they have advanced drone technology.
That would be three letters, right?
Yeah, DJI.
DJI.
Right. And there are others. We see Ehang doing some interesting things. And China certainly has the technical ability to develop package delivery drones and the infrastructure that would support them. But there's a couple of other factors here at play that this article mentions as good reasons why package delivery in China is sort of set to take off.
One of them is the largest e-commerce company in the world, which is Alibaba, and also followed by JD.com. These two companies are in the class of Amazon, so it would make sense that they would want to do delivery. The other thing that it is the CAAC, or the Chinese Civil Aviation Administration of China, is supporting drone delivery and encouraging it. And the government sees this as a way of narrowing the gap between rural poverty and urban wealth. And China has the fact that they are in a way, they have the ability to provide a top-down regulation, where we wouldn't have this in Europe or here in the States. We're working from the bottom up, sort of, but China has the ability with its government to set the rules for everybody to follow quickly.
That's right, and the CAAC has given some of the companies approval to trial rural deliveries. In fact, JD.com, and there's also an express delivery company, SF Holding, and they already have about 40 drones that are making deliveries. We've also, I think we've talked about the heavy lift project of Alibaba. They're looking at long-range cargo drones. So this is more than just moving goods to individual consumers. That's what we often think of when we think of drone delivery. But they're looking at cargo aspect of moving product in bulk, and they're looking at doing that with drones. So you take all of these things together, and it's kind of like, David, the stars align in China when it comes to taking the lead, maybe even internationally, when it comes to drone delivery. Certainly a lot of other companies and some other countries are actively looking at drone deliveries and trying to develop the technologies and take the steps necessary to make it a reality. But, you know, China just might pull it all together faster than the rest of the world is able to.
Yeah, we'll have to watch the Asian dragon and see what happens. But let's talk about more dragons. This was from spectrum.iee. Flying dragon robot transforms itself to squeeze through gaps. I thought this was a pretty amazing piece of tech.
Yes. And this is another item that came to us through our Slack listener team. Frank pointed this out, and it comes from the JSK lab that's at the University of Tokyo. Now, this is a modular robot. They call it Dragon, which stands for dual rotor embedded multi-link robot with the ability of multi-degree of freedom aerial transformation. Wow, what a mouthful. Well, you can pick out a D, an R, an A, a G, and an O-N from that phrase, and that's how you get to Dragon. And it is modular. It's made up of these segments. Each segment is, in a way, it's almost like its own little drone, but the segments are connected by hinges. And each of these segments has some ducted fan thrusters that provide roll and pitch. And there's a video of this thing in operation. And David, this thing can twist and reconfigure itself to change the overall shape of the collection of segments.
It's pretty intense. It's not something we would have normally thought about a couple of years ago. This is, I think, going to be around a bit while, because if you want to do sort of pipeline inspections, this thing looks like it can do a 90-degree turn without a problem. It just looks really cool and will find lots of applications.
Yeah, I think some of which we can't even think of now. One of the applications that's mentioned along with this is an ability to get into small or narrow spaces by kind of stretching itself out. But this strikes me as the kind of thing, David, where there are probably a lot of applications for something that can change its shape that are, you know, we can't even think of them right now. But when you have that capability, they may present themselves. But another aspect of this that's really impressive to me is the control mechanism. I mean, we used to start out with a single drone and controlling it, and we have swarms of drones, independent drones, and controlling the collection of them together. This is, I guess, in some ways like that, except that they're physically connected. The segments or the individual pieces are physically connected. And so the control logic behind all that has got to be something that's pretty impressive. But I think this is kind of early on in the development. I don't know, I can't remember exactly how many segments are in this drone that's been demonstrated, or this Dragon drone that's been demonstrated. I think it might be four about, but gosh, you can imagine just huge strings of them and performing incredible feats. It's pretty exciting tech.
It is. Well, let's go from long and thin and to large and fat. How's that for a transition?
Yeah.
This was from PR Newswire. KT unveils 5G emergency rescue platform, the Skyship. South Korean telecom company KT Corp has announced a disaster and safety management platform, the Skyship.
And this platform uses remotely controlled drones as part of the overall search and rescue strategy here, looking for disaster survivors. So what we have here is this platform, if you will. It's made up of four different components. The first one is the Skyship airship, and that's what it sounds like. That's the big airship. Then there is the command and control station, the command, control, and communication station, actually, the Skyship C3, a mobile ground control station. And then there are Skyship drones and Skyship robots. And the way this works is that the Skyship airship itself, it's a helium-filled airship, and it includes the propellants and cameras and network modules and drones. And what it does is it performs signal scanning to detect the smartphone signals of victims of disaster. And it maps them to customer databases. Basically, what it does is it says, okay, each of these disaster victims is carrying typically a phone, a mobile phone. Well, that's basically a homing device. And if you can pick up the signals from that, you can actually identify who those individuals are, what their names are, what their ages are, that kind of information. And then this thing can locate within about a 50-meter radius where each of the individuals is in this disaster. And then it sends out the drones to locate them individually and more specifically. It's kind of a multi-step, multi-component kind of approach to locating disaster victims.
I like to send in the drones part. Kind of reminds me of Broadway, send in the clowns. This is pretty cool. You've got a mothership that can that's remotely carried, and the mothership acts like a giant antenna. And 50 meters is basically a football field. And then you can, once you locate the victims, you can deploy either robots, which are basically RC cars, or quadcopters. And you could deliver supplies or food or medical supplies so that people have the necessary things until they can get help to arrive. And it's all run by a mobile base truck that can be deployed. I like this setup. The nice thing about helium balloons or helium dirigibles is you can deflate them, and you could probably pack this all up and away you go to the site, set it up, and start contacting everybody. It's another piece of tech that's going to have a lot of uses.
Now, KT is working or has worked with some other organizations to put together this design. One is the drone maker Metismake, and they've worked with them to develop the Skyship 2. This is actually the second iteration of this. They also got some design help from the U.S. National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, NACA, NACA, which is kind of interesting. But they say that this can fly for up to 6 hours. It's got a maximum speed of 80 kilometers per hour, and it can withstand 13 meter per second wind gusts, payload capability of up to 5 kilograms. You know, when you look at this also, you say, well, this is coming from a telecommunications company. Well, you know, why is a telecommunications company involved in this? Well, it is kind of based around this notion of using mobile phone signals to locate victims. So they kind of have, you know, some experience in that area. I imagine they also have the databases that they say that they're going to rely on. But it's kind of a spectacular concept. What I can't tell, David, and I don't know if you get any sense for this, is how real this is. You know, is this just a exercise in what could be possible? Or is this something that might actually get developed and built? It's kind of hard to say at this point, but certainly with the players involved that are working with KT, I guess you'd think that maybe this is intended to be real.
I think it is, because surprisingly, none of the tech that they're talking about needs to be created. It's a lot of off-the-shelf stuff that can be modified.
Yeah, good point.
I mean, we talked about on Airplane Geeks Wingfoot 3, that, you know, that's modern technology, semi-rigid dirigibles, which is what this would be. The remote piloted vehicles, or on ground and land, and even probably you could even probably deploy small boats. And we all know that our phones know where we are all the time. Sometimes we don't know where our phones are, but our phones always know where we are. And it would be kind of a good advertisement for the tele company. If you have our phone, we'll find you first.
Yeah, motivation.
Sorry, I'm a marketer by trade. I think, you know, got to come up with the gimmick.
All right. Well, should we continue our little tour around the world here?
Sure. I think it's going to get cold. I think this was wishful thinking for both of us.
Mm.
A bird's eye view of the Arctic. This was from phys.org. The Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences, or CERES, and NOAA research finds that drones and other unmanned technologies can cost-effectively collect weather data in harsh or remote environments and contribute to better weather and climate models. Ah, another use of drones to forecast the weather.
And fly in some of the harsh weather, too. When you think of flying in Arctic conditions, not only are you talking about low temperatures, but you know, wind and snow and all of that, it doesn't strike you right off as being conducive to flying drones. But what they're finding here is that they are able to fly in those kind of conditions with unmanned aircraft as well as tethered balloons, and they're actually being used in the Arctic. What we see is the CERES researcher who's working in the NOAA Earth System Research Laboratory says that we're showing that we have the ability to deploy unmanned aircraft and tethered balloon systems routinely in very harsh environment for targeted field campaigns. We're also supporting development efforts to make these technologies available to the broader scientific community. So this is moving along. There's an organization, part of the Department of Energy, called the Atmospheric Radiation Measurement, or ARM, user facility, and they're now actually accepting proposals from atmospheric scientists to deploy UASs at their research sites. So some pretty serious stuff going on.
And this day and age, atmospheric radiation is probably an important thing to be monitoring. And the ARM aerial facility owns 4 DataHawk UASs built by the University of Colorado in Boulder. They're a small, relatively inexpensive 1 meter wingspan with an 80 gram payload measuring location, altitude, pressure, temperature, humidity, wind speed, turbulence, and surface temperature. And the DataHawk can be launched by hand from a portable bungee launcher or drop from a balloon, and has about 40 minutes endurance. That's a lot of data you can take for 80 grams, you know?
It sure
the
is.
Nice thing about an airplane, or like we've seen with fixed wing drones, is you can use you can make the fixed wing into solar power or you can bake it into one giant sensor to pull out all that data.
Now, they're also starting to use larger unmanned aircraft, the Arctic Shark. It's a fixed wing. It's much larger, 22-foot wingspan, has an empty weight of 427 pounds, maximum payload of 100 pounds, and this thing can fly to altitudes of 15,000 to 18,000 feet. So they're also using the larger-sized unmanned aircraft. So what we see here is some real progress in the harsh environment, flying in the Arctic weather.
But data is data. And, you know, if you're going to fly transcontinentally, well, here, let's put this back to drone delivery. If you're going to have long-range drones flying the Arctic Circle or towards the polar, all of this data could be useful for drone delivery, international drone delivery, or transcontinental drone delivery. So a lot of good data there, and we always need more data. And in honor of more data, last week, Ken sent us a story from our Slack team, which I got Max talking about our Slack team, and we forgot to talk about the story. And that was from verticalmag.com. Transcend announces affordable city-to-city VTOL, or vertical takeoff and landing, aircraft.
Yeah, Transcend Air Corporation, they've announced that they're developing a 6-seat aircraft called the VY, V-Y. Ken says, I like the name of the aircraft, VY. Transcend says no airports needed, that the VY will utilize VTOL-ready landing pads. Now, this starts out life as a piloted aircraft, but in looks and in mission, it's similar to a number of other proposals that we've talked about on this show, unmanned. Many of them start out as being flown by a pilot, at least in the development program, with the idea that ultimately they would be unmanned. Now, I don't think Transcend has said anything about whether this particular vehicle would transition to being unmanned or not. But, you know, I think they're all kind of playing in the same market, in the same space of trying to provide transportation to, well, either individuals or small groups sometimes, typically in urban areas. I don't know, David. I don't know if the public is going to accept the unmanned versions of these kinds of aircraft, or if people are just always going to want to see a pilot up front.
If you close the door, you don't know if there's a pilot there or not.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean, there are trains there. I believe the Bay Area Rapid Transit, or BART in San Francisco, drives itself. There's nobody in the cab, you know. So, but I think it'll come. I mean, we haven't gotten used to driverless cars yet, but they're supposedly coming, and we have driverless trains, and I don't know about driverless boats, but driverless airplanes, like I said, behind that big steel door, there may not be people flying that airplane. You know, some guy may be sitting in a box somewhere flying that 737 that you got into, because did you see the pilot go aboard? I didn't.
Well, Transcend says that what they're putting together here will fly three times faster than helicopters at a cost of half as much. So this is proposed to be a pretty zippy little aircraft, 405 miles per hour with a range of 450 miles. And it has what some general aviation aircraft have, which I always like to see, which is a whole aircraft parachute. I think that helps with generating some of the confidence, you know, in the safety of the aircraft. But the team is pretty experienced. If you visit the Transcend page, which is transcend.aero, look at their team, and it's a pretty impressive lineup of aerospace executives and engineers, some entrepreneurs, but people with a lot of experience, many of them having worked on VTOL aircraft of different type, both electric and otherwise. You know, it's not the same as some of these startups, David, that seem to be populated by
people out of the industry.
Yeah, Silicon Valley wide, you know, people with too much money and not enough experience, who think that if they just hire the right people that they'll be successful. It seems like a company that's made up of people who have track records. I mentioned electric. Also, this is not an electric aircraft. It uses a gasoline engine. In fact, it uses a Pratt & Whitney Canada PT6. Turboprop, which is one of the, if you're not familiar with it, an engine that's been out in the manned aviation industry for years and years and years, and has a reputation for being very reliable. It's an aggressive timetable. They plan to launch commuter air service in early 2024, which doesn't feel like that far into the future.
Well, and given what we've experienced over the 10 years that we've been doing this, 6 years seems like a very short time for all of the other projects that we've watched and things that have gotten rushed into production and have long legacies, like F-35s and A380s and 787s. So we'll see how well they do. Last but not least, we have some feedback.
Yeah, actually, you may recall back in episode 232, we talked about a company called V-Cube Robotics, and what they had developed was a package they call Solar Check, and this is designed for inspections of solar power plants. So you might recall the drones under this concept would fly autonomously over a predefined flight path over the solar panels to inspect them, take images using infrared thermography cameras, and then perform some analysis on that and report to the team where there were issues that needed to be addressed. Well, we see that a couple of things have changed. The company has changed their name. Used to be V-Cube Robotics. Now it's Sensyn Robotics, S-E-N-S-Y-N. And they've also raised some funds, approximately 1.2 billion yen, which is a little under $11 million U.S. And so they've got the funding. The origin of the name, you know, I thought, wow, Sensyn, what does that mean? Well, in Japanese, Sensyn has the meanings of advanced or dedicated and calm contemplation, while in English, Sensyn, it's a combination of sense and synchronize, or sensing and synchronization, which they say are key elements in the solutions that the company is developing. So, but anyway, that's the update on Sensyn Robotics.
And I know my co-host has been to Asia and can type, because I would never know where the yen sign is on the keyboard. And he put it in the show notes. So good to him.
We'll see if that translates into WordPress and actually shows up on the and the episode post, which you can find at the uavdigest.com/250. As always, we have links to all the stories we talk about, a couple of videos or a video or two to go along with the stories. Check those out. You can typically watch those right in the show notes, and that's fairly convenient. But also, David, we're all over social media.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest, on Twitter at UAV Digest. We don't have an Instagram account yet, but I'm working on that. But you can also send us some email or feedback at feedback@theuavdigest.com. You can join our Slack team by sending an email to theuavdigest.com and become part of our power listeners and who are keep us up to date with all the news. And of course, we'd love you to leave some feedback on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. Or you can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. And that would be cafepress.com/theuavdigest. And all those links are available again on our homepage. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.